as well as against a manager at LNW for collusion, fraud and forgery. Slide 52 sets out the NPA referral for contraventions of the PFMA, as well as an NPA referral in respect of an official for collusion, fraud and forgery. We did an interim presidential report, which was submitted to the president in October 2018. The corruption investigation has been extended as we've got new evidence of corruption and this needs to be taken to its logical conclusion. There was a slight delay as we had to get an extension to our proclamation, but this has been granted and the investigation is underway. As stated, we are doing a full value for money exercise as well. Some of the challenges experienced in Lapele Northern Water are set out there, and these include parallel investigations as well as a multitude of lawyers' letters, and more importantly, an interdict that was obtained or is in the process of trying to be obtained against the SIU by Lapele Northern Water to stop our investigation. The board withdrew as the second respondent, and Mr. Lakhodi is now the sole applicant, and we are the matter will be enrolled for hearing soon. Getting to the second part of the same proclamation, the contract that LTE got at Human Settlements, also known as the Sweetwaters. Here on slide 56, we set out the details of the outcomes. The investigation has been concluded and the final report submitted to the President in September of 2018. The SIU found the contract was awarded irregularly and that there was corruption involving the company and the officials. SIU has instituted civil litigation in March 2018 to set aside the contract valued at 108 million rand. Again, this matter is also under case management and the last meeting was on the 27th of May and the judge will be contacting the parties with a new date soon to continue with case management. There was also a referral to the NPA in respect of the former DG as well as another criminal referral in respect of officials for corruption. Further NPA and ASU referrals for additional officials and entities for corruption were made on the 3rd of April, and the NPA's dedicated capacity is tracking progress on these matters. Evidence was referred to SARS for a false tax clearance certificate and corruption, and three disciplinary charges in respect of three officials were referred in November 2017. These hearings were set down, but the officials resigned, and however, the civil and criminal action will continue against these officials by the SIU. We also made a referral to the CIDB in respect of this matter too. Right. Getting on to the last proclamation that I will be covering, I'm trying to go as fast as I can. This is the SAP investigation.
Don't steam too fast ahead that we lose the salient points and the important issues. If we need to extend time, we will. I think it's important that we get all the details.
Great. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
This is the last proclamation I'm presenting, and it's Proclamation R27, which is the contracts awarded to SAP. Slide 59 sets out the mandate, which is what the proclamation entitles us to do. The allegations we received on this matter is that SAP licenses were purchased for more than 500 million rand, which were not necessary and without correct tender processes, and a payment of 35 million rand in kickbacks was made. We commenced investigations immediately after our proclamation was issued, September 2018, uplifted computers and documentation from the department. We found evidence, this is general, now broadly speaking, and I'll go into the detail of the two contracts that are involved here, but that the contract value is around about 950 million excluding VAT, which consisted of 450 million for the licenses and another 450 odd million for the maintenance fee over 5 years. There was no needs analysis conducted, no budget for the purchase of these licenses, no environmental approval, and thus far, a total of 285 million was actually paid over to SAP. CETA was also not consulted, which is required for such purposes. And in fact, CETA advised the department against proceeding with this contract, but despite this, they did. The timeframes for our investigation, this one, which is a current one and still ongoing, is that the presidential report, an interim one, will be completed by August. And civil litigation will be initiated within the second quarter of 2020, which is where we are now, and it is very imminent that this matter will get into court. We have briefed the Office of the State Attorney, senior counsel has been appointed, and our papers have already been finalized and they're in the process of being issued. In those papers, we pray for an order declaring that the decision to appoint these service providers is inconsistent with the Constitution, the PFMA, the Treasury regulations, and we request that it be set aside. In respect of the first of the two agreements here, the 2015 agreement, which was worth about $188 million, we're on slide 63, we found here firstly that it was entered into pursuant to a misrepresentation that an earlier agreement was actually due to expire in 2015, whereas it was only going to expire in December 2016, so there was a clear misrepresentation there. Secondly, we found no budget for it, and thirdly, the department did not comply with its own SEM policy, as well as the Constitution, PFMA, CETA, etc. The second contract, slide 64, valued at about 949 million rand, the SIU found to be irregular and should be set aside. Here, the department procured this IT-related software for other entities which the department had no authority to procure those goods and services for, which included water boards. The ITC department and the chief information officer, who are the subject matters on IT in the department, did not support the procurement of these licenses. The department and entities did not receive services or products in respect of this agreement, and again, the department did not comply with its own policies as well as the other regulations. Also no budget, and led to the department incurring fruitless and wasteful expenditure to the value of 285 million rand, VAT inclusive. What has happened so far as a result of the SIU's investigation? We've made one referral to SARS in July 2019 for tax discrepancies. SARS confirmed that they're reviewing the matter. We referred our matter to the State Attorney's Office for just over R1 billion for litigation, which should soon be seeing itself in court. An NPA referral against the former acting DG for contravention of the PFMA, an AFU referral in January of this year, a disciplinary referral against the DDG in October 2019, and we're pleased to report that the status of this referral is that she has been served with the charges, and the hearing was set down for the 28th of April 2020. Unfortunately, did not proceed due to lockdown, and a new date will be arranged for this hearing to commence. Another disciplinary was referred against the chief director involved in the approvals, and a referral to the BBBEE in August of 2019. And that is my section. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Without wasting more time, and thank you really for the indulgence in terms of time and affording us to really cover the salient parts of the presentation. With regard to this first part, Chair, you would see that we really, if I refer to the first slide around consequence management, we're really making sure that the speed at which we make referrals and the follow-ups to make sure that there's consequence management. With specific reference to the Pelle Northern Water, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, the presentation really shows that there has been various maladministration and possibly frustration of the SIU investigation. The point raised there that there's even an interdict using the resources of the Water Board to seek to interdict an official investigation by SIU. Really, that we find that quite abhorrible. The board that has withdrawn as the respondent or the first applicant in the interdict is the current board. The previous board is really the one that was pushing on this interdict. So the point I made earlier on was that we will consider taking an action against the members of the previous board, because we really believe that it was not warranted that they used the board resources in that case. With regard to the SEP licenses, the investigation is pretty much concluded. The presidential report will be presented in August, as we say. The civil litigation there, while the others that we have mentioned Lepelle Sweetwaters are in the High Court. Since the inception of the Special Tribunal, all the new matters will now go to the Special Tribunal. The SEP case is one in point. We would like to push it to the Special Tribunal as quickly as possible so that the recovery happens as quickly as possible. I'd like at this stage, with your permission, Chair, to pause and then allow my other colleague who lead. The next presentations will really go quicker. The bulk was the ones that we've already presented. Ms. Haroon will take the Honorable Committee through the Umgeni water. Right? Is it Gina?
Yes.
Gina, turn over.
Good morning, committee members, chairperson. I deal with Proclamation R4 of 2019, which is the Umgeni Water Proclamation. The objectives and mandate of the SIU are set out in the proclamation. It's dealing with the procurement irregularities in relation to the contracts that are listed in this slide. The first area is the Contract Participation Gold Program of Umgeni. The second is the provisioning and upgrading of emergency boreholes in the Mkanyakude district, the repair and refurbishment of the Nagel Aqueduct, replacement of filter slabs, pipelines, and nozzles in terms of Contract Participation Gold Programs, and then the provisioning and upgrading of chlorine distribution equipment, distribution of chlorine, and the upgrading of shaft pipes and lifts at the Durban Heights plant, the provisioning of emergency pipelines in the Ugu District Municipality, the purchase and installation of control valves in terms of the CPG programs of Umgeni, and the installation of Nungwane pipelines in the area of Amanzimtoti.
Next slide.
The second area of the proclamation is maladministration in respect of the implementation of the CPG program by Umgeni and any losses suffered by Umgeni or the state. And the third area is the unlawful and improper conduct by board members, officials, and Umgenis of Umgeni board. Next slide. The focus areas are looking at the procurement of these different programs. I've indicated the 8 different programs and the values herein are recorded. Next slide. The focus area secondly is to look at the maladministration, and the third one is to look at the fraudulent and corrupt activities of the officials and other members, contractors, suppliers, and service providers. Next slide. The progress, we are progressing with this investigation and we've completed a substantial amount of the investigation. We're looking at the next slide, please, Gina. The SIU is at an advanced stage of the investigation and we foresee the following outcomes: actual disciplinary referrals to Umgeni Water, criminal referrals to the National Prosecuting Authority, referrals to the Asset Forfeiture Unit, and civil recovery. There are a number of constraints we have because these contracts date back to January 2012. The contracts also involve a large number of contractors, subcontractors, and numerous CPG partners. There are a large number of officials that have left the employ of Umgeni Water. There's also a lack of documentation where 20% of the documents cannot be located. Initially, we had a lack of cooperation by Umgeni officials. However, this has been dealt with and we now receive their cooperation. The last constraint is that the lockdown has impacted on us meeting witnesses. However, this is currently being attended to using virtual meetings and we will continue doing this going forward. The investigation is in an advanced stage. As indicated, we have now established a good measure of cooperation with the Umgeni Water Board, and the project end date is 30th November, and we envisage that this date will be met.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Before we go to the next and the last part of the presentation, Just on this investigation, I have instructed the team and the general teams in SIU, particularly around the documentation, because you know our investigations are evidence driven, and where there's lack of documentation, we get challenges. So, but our focus is gonna just not end there. That we are informed that the documents are not available. What we are doing now is to check in whose custody were those documents. There's legislation relating to archiving of documents, whether that legislation was complied with. If not, who is then to be held accountable for the lack of those documentation? And we need to point to all the levels in the board or in the department, and then we will do so as evidence points. I'd like to now invite my last colleague who will present on the Tugela Khudethro, Mrs. Nozipho Jama will take us through that. Nozipho, over to you.
Honourable Chairperson and committee members, good afternoon. I will be presenting on Proclamation R28 of 2019. This matter pertains to the emergency upgrading of the Tugela Khudethro transfer scheme.
Please turn on your camera.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
It's on slide 77.
All right. You may proceed, ma'am.
Okay. Slide 78 and 79 sets out the mandate of our proclamation. Slide 80. These are the matters or the allegations that were reported to the SIU. The first one being that the appointed service provider for the upgrade was not on a panel of professional service providers of the department. The second being that the procurement of the service provider for the emergency upgrade of the Tugela Khudethro transfer scheme was irregular as it did not conform to procurement prescripts. Thirdly, the service provider was appointed on a pretense of an emergency which was not justifiable. Lastly, the appointed service provider, which is AECOM SA, was paid an amount of 419 million, excluding VAT, whilst the upgrade was not completed after the contract period expired in March 2019. We'll move on to slide 81. The SIU identified three focus areas for this investigation. The first being the procurement of a panel of professional service providers. And the work that has been conducted thus far is that we've reviewed the SCM processes that we've followed to appoint the service providers into the WP0485 WTE panel of professional service providers. And this investigation has revealed that AECOM SA was in fact on the panel. And for this lack of the investigation, we've now drafted a memorandum of closure for legal review. The second focus area is the procurement of a service provider for an emergency upgrade of the Tugela Khudethro transfer scheme. For this lack of the investigation, we've reviewed the procurement processes, analyzed documents, interviewed relevant officials and role players, and we're currently commissioning affidavits, and this lack of investigation is ongoing. The third focus area was the expenditure incurred by the department for the emergency upgrade. We're currently conducting financial investigations, and we are now interviewing officials, relevant officials, including the Quantity Surveyor and engineers, and this lack of investigation is also ongoing. So we'll move on to slide 82. Upon investigating this matter, we revealed that on 28 September 2017, the department awarded the contract for the emergency upgrading of the Tugela Khudethro transfer scheme to AECOM to the value of 559 million, excluding VAT, for the period of 18 months. AECOM has claimed an amount of 119 million, excluding VAT, from the department for the emergency upgrade. Subsequently, on since February 2019, AECOM submitted a determination letter to the department before the completion of its contractual obligations. During the joint site visit between the SIU and the relevant officials from the department, it was observed on the construction site that equipment crucial to the functioning of the scheme were not on site. We've attached photos in our later slides that we will all view. And we also observed that the incomplete work and exposure of materials to the elements is compromising the quality and will result in the department having to replace those items and incur additional expenditure. We also observed that some items have been removed by the subcontractors from site due to contractual disputes with AECOM, and these items will have to be replaced, which will incur additional expenditure by the department. We move on to slide 83. This slide depicts the expenditure incurred thus far by the department, which are all payments made to AECOM from the inception of the project up to the contract expiry, which was at the end of March 2019. As I earlier alluded, the contract value was 559 million. The exact amount is reflecting on the slide. And AECOM has claimed 419 million, and the exact amount is reflecting on the slide, excluding VAT, which interprets to 75% of the contractual value. And the remainder, which is the amount that is not claimed, which has not been claimed, is 139 million. And I move to, as I indicated earlier, that we conducted site visits on the construction site. These are not all the structures that are not completed, but these are the major structures that are crucial in the functioning of the scheme. So we've just taken photos of the crucial items, and we, for the purposes of this presentation, we included these ones. We observed that the water storage tank is incomplete. Picture two, we observed that this pipeline is incomplete and is deteriorating due to rust. These might need to be replaced at a later stage. Slide 85, we observed that AECOM built a temporary dam, which needs to be removed. Picture four, the first pump station is empty. Slide 86, the second pump station is incomplete. Picture six, the extraction point is also incomplete. The chamber is incomplete. As I indicated, that these are not all structures that are incomplete that are on site. We just chose the few that are major in the proper functioning of the scheme. Slide 88. We intend to refer disciplinary action against three senior officials involved in the procurement for the emergency upgrade. We also intend to refer civil case for the recovery of losses suffered by the department, especially for the partial delivery as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Thirdly, we also intend to refer to the NPA additional evidence in support of the investigation that is currently ongoing. The department has referred a criminal case to SAPS. It's been registered. It's now under investigation by ACTT. That will end my presentation on Proclamation R28 of 2019.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will not add much on this proclamation except to say the revelations by the investigation are really showing that there's a continuation of the observation of either poor project management or just some irregularities in the project management space. A significant amount of money has been paid, but as you can see there, the investigation has revealed incomplete work, which really it's a worrying factor. We're going to move now to to the new allegations. My colleague, Mr. Pranesh Maharaj, who deals with new proclamations, will deal with that quite quickly, because there's really not much really to say at this stage, except to say we've received new allegations. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I will be dealing with slides 90 and 91. The SIU received allegations from a whistleblower regarding serious maladministration at Lepele Northern Water Board and at Amatola Water Board, primarily in relation to the procurement of certain services. So let me start with Lepele Northern Water Board. What the whistleblower has alleged is that there were two service providers that were appointed, one for drought relief technology services and the other for investigation services. Now, the allegation that's been leveled is that the appointments that were made were done in a manner that was contrary to Section 217 of the Constitution, which you may recall deals with the manner in which public procurement is regulated. But in addition to that, it's then also alleged that aside from the contravention of Section 217, these appointments were also made in a manner that did not conform with Lepele Northern Water Board's own procurement prescripts. Specific allegations include that one of the service providers was appointed on a fast-tracked basis and that there was no, there was insufficient cause for this. Now, you'll recall that if procurement is undertaken in a manner that amounts to a deviation from an open tender process, there are specific requirements to be followed in terms of Treasury Regulation 16A 6.4. The other serious allegation is that the procurement of both these services, there was no budget underlying this procurement, so Lepele Northern Water Board was never in a position to fund the procurement. After having assessed these allegations, the SIU was satisfied that a case had been made out for us to apply to the President for a proclamation. We've prepared a motivation and we've submitted it to the Presidency via the Department of Justice for the President's consideration. Right. If we could move to slide 91, please. At Amatola Water Board, the self-same service providers that were appointed at Lepele were then also appointed at Amatola Water Board. Again, the allegation is that the appointments were made contrary to Section 217 and here contrary to Amatola's own procurement prescripts. What is concerning is that 230 million rands was set aside for drought relief measures, and of this amount, 60% was ring-fenced for the service provider that was appointed. This shows a rather disproportionate skewing in terms of money set aside for this particular service provider. Once again, the procurement was not budgeted for in respect of both service providers. We've assessed the allegations. We've satisfied that a case has been made out and we have applied to the President for a proclamation. Our application is under consideration and we await a decision from the President. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. We are now on the last slide, slide number 92. We are currently, we have previously received allegations by a whistleblower relating to War on Leaks program. And this was put through our internal case assessment process because this had to do with some of the allegations which were revealed during the external audit process. So we had to engage with the Auditor General's office. We are at the stage now where we'll probably also approach the department for further information in this regard. We should be in a position where we pronounce ourselves in terms of either amendment or a new proclamation. The issue around Sidibeng Water Board, we identified that there was about 419 irregular expenditure as reported by the department in the presentation on the 26th of May 2020. We will look into that matter and assess that matter for purposes. Hello?
Can you not on the platform, please? Who is this 50229? I would like that people who are actually put on the platform have got names, because then I don't know who those people are.
Can I proceed, Chair?
You Proceed, Advocate.
Thank you. Thank you. Just to close on, we will then consider all these allegations with the view of processing proclamations so that we can investigate these areas as well. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we would really like to thank the committee for indulging us with more time. We wanted to make sure that we cover our presentation as detailed as possible. We thank you very much for the opportunity.
All right, thank you very much to the SIU team. Advocate Mtibu, really appreciate that. No, that is fine. Colleagues, let us go straight into questions so that we can have some time to engage. On the list, the first one is Honorable Mazamba. Honorable Liz.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Mazamban's good. I'd love to have some nice hot slap chips right now, I think, for my lunch. But anyway, I have my wife who keeps my diet strictly under control. And thank you, Advocate, to you and your team for the work that you guys are doing and the conclusions that are coming out of it. I'm a little bit sad in a way that you guys have got to take sort of bold steps to get information and documents are lost and so on. But with regard to Lepelele, I see you specifically said that there was a search and seizure operation undertaken. What were the circumstances there? I mean, obviously, when people don't cooperate, one speaks to their superiors and so on. And generally, I think, and obviously I'm not involved in your operations, you should get the cooperation you need. But a search and seizure is quite a serious operation. I've been involved in some in my previous life, and going in, grabbing computers, locking the doors, it's quite a thing. So I'd just be interested to know why it was necessary and who exactly was the problem there. With regard to Mplatuza, case is kind of almost closed, but who are the board members who have been criminally charged, and what is the status of those charges? You guys are doing a great job of following up on these charges and making sure that the consequences are following. I'd be keen to hear about Mplatuza and what the status of the board criminal cases is there, and who exactly they are. Mr. Chairman, then the question of the Umgeni water. I mean, Umgeni water is an institution, one of the oldest water entities that I know of, and it used to have an incredibly good reputation, but seemingly it's gone off the rails a bit. And I know I might be asking a question that can't really be answered, but let me ask it anyway. Is the view of the advocate and his team that the Umgeni Water Board as a whole is on a sound footing, and this investigation is just an aberration, as it were, or is it, have the problems they've encountered there indicated a deeper problem with that water board? And then just one last question, Mr. Chairman. In terms of the new investigations, I was wondering whether there's been any tip-offs or whistleblowers with regard to the 19,000-odd tanks that were bought at the beginning of the lockdown and distributed all over the country at huge expense, and I'm told the majority stand empty as we speak. Has the SIU received any tip-offs or whistleblowers about that particular project? Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Honourable Lise. And the next one will be Honourable Mente, followed by the Honourable Somyo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'm covered by list on the names of the board that were forwarded for criminal offences. But the second part is on from page 20. That's from page 26. A list of disciplinary referrals that are relating to conflicts of interest identified by SIU. I see at the end of the list, there is a stipulated amount of 8.9 million as paid to officials. Were those the salaries or is this the amount that they were charged for? And if so, can this amount be allocated to each and every individual or the transgression on each and every transgression which is stipulated on the list? Can it have its own specific amount as so as to see these outcomes of the transgressions? Because I see there is one official that just got off on a written warning. Line number six. Rosina Khorong. She just got final written warning, and then others charges, there were no charges against them. The matters were closed. I don't understand what's happening there on that particular list. If it can be expanded, please. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. Honorable Somyo.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on the investigations which seek to expose the fact that there is this company, I think it's IRCOM, which appears to have been somewhat paid amounts which are not consumerate to work done so far, and the report seek to expose the fact that there are quite a number of deficiencies, unfinished work, some of the infrastructure which is not done in prescriptions, and so far I thought that I would hear something about what is it then that has been done in as far as such a company is concerned. When closer to 80% of the amount that has been paid for close to nothing that has been delivered. The second area is the area that relate to the steel pipeline. A report which has been handed to the president on the 28th of October 2018. Are we aware as to what has transpired after the handing over of the report? It's already close to 2 years now, and a number of findings have been somewhat reported in as far as that investigation is concerned. What is the case in as far as such a finalized report is concerned, which links up to another one, which is one on the 26th of October 2018 report finalized. The last one is on the occurrence. And the scale of advanced payments something which you'd see that there are some identified advanced payments infringements relating to what you have indicated on the Vuani, things of Vuani pipeline. And are there any other advanced payments identified within the investigations that you have undertaken just to check the occurrence of such a state of handling of finances and the payments? Thank you very much, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, colleagues. I think in the absence of, there's no other member on my list. I just want to, maybe these questions I'll pose at the end. Oh, there's a hand here. Who's this? All right. Advocate Ntibe and your team, you can proceed to answer the questions. Colleagues, we will do a second round of questions if necessary. So over to you, SIU.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We appreciate the opportunity to respond. With regard to Honorable Lees, yes, the issue of documentation from time to time really confronts us. Documents that are missing, and it's not only in this investigation, it's really across various other investigations we do. We now seek to really understand where we are informed that documents are missing or cannot be found, because that can really be an easy way out, so to speak. So we don't really allow that anymore. We would like to know who was responsible for the safekeeping of the documents and who did not do his or her work according to the required legislation. Because that in itself, as I said, our evidence is in the main evidence-driven, and documents play a big role of giving us information. So we don't just leave it there. We make sure that we find out whose responsibility it was, and then we point it out. If there's any culpability, we point it out so that action can be taken. The issue around the search and seizure, the Honorable Lees is right. This is quite a drastic measure, and intendedly reserved, obviously, as a last resort. It's provided for in the legislation, but we don't just easily use that as an avenue. Firstly, because we're really dealing with state institutions, and we expect cooperation, and we are generally getting this cooperation. It's in fact, in my stay in SIU, I'm now in the fifth year, it's the only instance where we have really had to use this provision, and the reasons are as follows. We have had undertakings and engagements with the Lepelle CEO in particular, the board, and our view was that there is a deliberate attempt or deliberate action to frustrate the investigation of SIU. We did communicate with the department our intention, and so that the department could also assist. Then I'm certain that the department did communicate with the board and possibly the CEO. But our view was that if we did not take action at the time, there was a reasonable apprehension that evidence would be either destroyed or we would not be in a position to find the evidentiary material that we are looking for. So we took this decision, and this decision, for it to be executed, we have to go and present to a presiding, judicial presiding officer. We then presented our case, our motivation, and our need to conduct this this operation, which was granted. And we then executed it. And we seek, when as we execute, we seek to execute it with the integrity deserving. And in the process of executing it, there was cooperation, and we did get the information that we sought to support our investigation. And we, as we say in the presentation, the evidence, amongst others, revealed that despite the LTE being our evidence showing that it's been irregularly appointed, despite the summonses issued, there was a continued use of LTE, and that spiked up the irregular expenditure from 2.2 to 3.2 billion. As we speak, the matter is under litigation, and we are seeking to fast-track the process. So we really did not use this avenue of search and seizure with ease. It was with difficulty, but it was necessary. With the Umgeni Water Board, our investigation has to date really revealed that there is a possibility of deeper problems there. And we're stating it simply because of the observations that the investigation team has done. We will obviously still document that so that it is clear the extent to which we're pronouncing ourselves. And we are also of the view that there's quite an extent of maladministration by the officials of the Umgeni Water Board. We're just indicating this at this stage. The investigation is ongoing. We will, at an appropriate time, when we document the findings, like we did with the other observations, we'll put our observations in writing. With regard to the 19,000 tanks, we have not received any complaint, any formal complaint in that regard. Honorable Mente, thank you very much for that question. And in fact, just before I came in here, I just saw a communication which has been posted on the South African government page of the media, where Minister Mchunu says the heading is Minister Mchunu takes action against government officials doing business with the state. We are really delighted to see such kind of headlines, because it is a wide problem that we are finding as we investigate. So yes, those amounts that are mentioned there can be broken down and allocated to specific officials. We undertake to do that, and then we will send it through. It is indeed our view as well that when there is a charge that is preferred against any individual, the outcome, if the evidence supports it, the sanction should really be commensurate with the charge. So we do also take interest in finding out the nature of the sanction, such as final written warning, where we might have expended serious time and resources to investigate, but obviously those are adjudicated upon by the internal disciplinary processes. As I said, we can break down the amount, and then we can now just resend to the secretariat. If the list can be expanded, yes, we will do so, Honourable Mente. Honourable Somyo, it's equally worrying on our part, as the investigation has revealed that, as I said when I closed, that there's evidence of a significant amount being paid. I think more than 400 million being paid to a contractor who's no longer on site, and the work is not complete. In fact, some of the equipment or materials left there are likely to be derelict, and the department will have to either start afresh or spend some money to resuscitate the project. What is happening to the company? We are definitely going to take action, as we show in the presentation, so that we quantify the amounts that the company has been paid, which we have in the presentation. We will put that through our civil litigation process and again fast track it to the special tribunal, so that that company is pursued. And if there are any criminal referrals against the company or anyone in the department, and disciplinary matters, we will also do so. What I have instructed the teams to do, since we have started with the lifting the bar in terms of the civil litigation, we've said, whilst we pursue the company, but there is also a possibility that internally there's someone or who has not done his or her work and has caused the department a prejudice in terms of a pecuniary prejudice. So what we are doing now, like we have done in other matters, like in the Lepelle, like in others in Sweetwater, we have sought to join in senior officials to the civil litigation process, so that we can also get orders against them, and if possible, recover some money from them. So that's what's informing our civil litigation strategy, so that we hold everyone to account. The scale of advance payments, we have really observed that, except for those that we have mentioned in the presentations, so far there isn't more that we have observed. But I mean, we can, as SIU now generally, it is a general problem. In the investigations that we do, we find that there is quite an amount of advance payments, and that really needs to be dealt with. But so far as this presentation is concerned, there is not more other advance payment that the evidence has revealed. Vuwani steel pipeline. The investigation, as we said, was completed as far as that Vuwani project is concerned, and the report was submitted to the Office of the President on the 26th of October 2018. There's again a civil litigation process is going on. There has been some findings relating to the grading of the contractor. So there's also been some irregularity with regards to the advance payment, just so that that part really it's not understandable that with evidence could reveal that a payment was made to improve the cash flow of a service provider. So we have found that, and we are making sure that actions are taken to recover those monies that have been paid. With regard to the names of the Umhlatuze board. At the moment, we do not have the names readily, but we can easily submit those. Again, the principle we take, similar to the principle that we use across all the investigations, if the accounting authority, being the board, is also pointed to by evidence that they have neglected or did not do their work appropriately, they've prejudiced the department or the water board, we will make sure that action is taken against those members of the board. Honorable Chair, I think those were the questions so far. I've covered those questions.
All right, thank you very much. Colleagues, any follow-up? I think on the issue of the question about the names, if that can be submitted, Advocate, next week, so that we bring that question to a finality. Colleagues, because today was a briefing and to give us a picture and a sense of how far things are moving, it does dawn on me, quite a number of reports that have gone to the presidency. We would need to get a briefing on how those have been processed, the implementation of the recommendations contained therein, not just insofar as water and sanitation is concerned, but you will recall from previous SIU briefings that we have at times been told that there are reports that have gone to, rather been submitted to the presidency. But we never get to know as to whether there's any implementation, because then it becomes pointless for the SIU to investigate and do the work that they do for it not to result in the desired consequence management. The flip side of that coin is that I think we will have to interact with the NPA insofar as ensuring that there is successful prosecution where it is necessary. But I think that will form part of the broader discussion with the anti-corruption task team, because the advocate, we remain fundamentally concerned at the slow pace of consequence management and successful prosecutions.
Yes.
We feel that the law enforcement agencies are seriously letting us down in this regard. And as you know, in the previous interactions we have had with the anti-corruption task team, we have expressed this particular outlook. We can't be saying the same thing over and over again. So if you may also convey that to your colleagues and counterparts in the law enforcement agencies, so that in the next interaction we actually speak to substantive implementation of things and process.
Indeed, I do so.
Because the public concern that there is no consequence remains legitimate for so long as the wheels of justice turn at a very slow pace. You need to move with the necessary urgency in that regard. So I hope that that will be dealt with. We will schedule a meeting with the anti-corruption task team. We were meeting with ESCOM last night. There are matters there as well.
Yes.
I must say that we welcome the fact that you are taking steps towards pursuing people even after they have left their particular department or institution. But of course, what you have done is an exception as opposed to being a norm in the public service. And we need to actually direct that is institutionalized, whether it's in departments or entities, and that consequently follows in that regard. Because of the lockdown, we were also unable to pursue our own oversight to some of the water projects, and I say projects, cautiously, because there are water failures for all intents and purposes. If you look at the boreholes in Limpopo, for example, and the astronomical costs which have been involved there, anchored in corruption of the highest order. But so the issue of water remains firmly on our table, and we're going to be using a large part of your work as a basis for us moving forward, because we feel that whilst the minister has appointed Advocate Mutau to investigate matters, which is a process which is being handled there, we need to devise a process here to bring to conclusion the matters of the Fifth Parliament. So I don't see any harm in Parliament pursuing its own inquiry and investigation, as we have said we want to do. We just need to work out the modalities of that particular matter. And you, as the SIU, will be a strategic partner for us in that regard, because the corruption at the Department of Water and Sanitation, particularly post 2014, it ranks amongst the worst that we have seen. The department literally brought to its knees in a sea of a drought, excuse that oxymoron there, but there's the absence of water and so on. So that the department really has been saddled and riddled by widespread corruption and mismanagement, and we really would be failing in our own duties if we don't pursue it. So the purposes of this briefing today was to help us frame our outlook, see how much work has been done and how much work still needs to be done, but also impress on you, SIU, that move with the necessary speed.
Yeah.
There is importance in you actually ensuring that you bring about your matters to conclusion. So we will also be applying the necessary pressure on your part to ensure that you also deliver and that you conclude your work. Just one final question, Advocate Mtibi, which is outside all of this. Has your process of migrating your offices from Pinetown to Durban, in KZN, been concluded?
Thank you, Chair. The process of moving the office has been concluded. We are at the moment just finalizing some of the logistical, or shall I say structural, they call it tenant installation in terms of the leases language. So that has pretty much been concluded, and the team will be settled. I'm informed by, it was supposed to be the 10th of July, so by that time everything will be settled. So the move has been concluded, Honorable Chair.
I would request that you look into that matter. I will send through correspondence to you probably by Monday of matters that I have received just as it was about to start. So that's why I have not put it to you, but complaints and concerns about staff which is already at work and about their health, particularly during this time of COVID. So I'll send that through, and then you can provide the answers. Colleagues, I will circulate that to you as well. I just said I couldn't speak to it now because I received it as the meeting was about to start, and hope that that matter will be resolved, the matter of urgency. Colleagues, just two announcements. Next week, we will be meeting with the Department of Public Works on an update on the funerals and how far they've gone with the implementation of the recommendations of that report and the consequence management in that regard. And the issues of the UIF will be with us as well next week. So on the 24th, we'll meet with Public Works. And then on the 26th, we're going to meet with the UIF, particularly around the COVID-related matters and how they are dispensing funds and the controls put in place and so on. So we'll have a full discussion with the UIF next week and Friday. So we will try in the middle of all the sittings to see what else we can do. And then on the proposal for oversight to Beitbridge, that remains a work in progress, and we will advise accordingly once things have been sorted in that regard. So, colleagues, I would like to take this opportunity to thank you. I'm going to check in the group. There's nothing else. All right. Colleagues, I want to thank you very much and wish you all a blessed weekend. SIU family, and thank you once again. And we will meet when we actually interact on other matters and other investigations. But the point of call will be a meeting insofar as the anti-corruption task team is concerned. And the issues of water and sanitation remain an apex priority for the committee. We are not going to take our foot off the pedal. To our staff and everybody on the meeting platform, thank you very much. IT, have a blessed weekend and we will meet next week.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Thank you. Lutho. Mangisuka nje la ngisawe ifuna, I'm very, very stressed, man.
Yozingela.
Ngwasemakhaya phela mina, so manje mase kungenayo inja. Uyabona nje ukuthi nginqoma. Ngingayikubanzuzoyibheka. All right, get chairman, have a good one. Sizobona.
Thank you so much. Sharp. Thank you so much. Thanks, advocate. Hey, little Dirk. Dirk? Wake up.
How are you? How are you?
I'm sleeping.
No, man, I'm just sitting. It's so cold here, man.
Hello, and welcome
to Injani. Hey, we're all right. How are you?
Good job, good.
Hey, I'm feeling cold, man.
What's that? He was dreaming like when he was a schoolboy and he didn't hear anything. He's sitting in the sun again.
No, today I was not dreaming. Today I was sick. I was alright. Okay. I was okay today. I was not dreaming today. Today I did not sleep. I did not sleep today.
But open chair, that's who I will not talk. Let me not talk. I want